It's Happy Hour again from Central City, New Orleans. Hello, I'm Grant Morris. We're live at Casa Borrega on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard in Central City, New Orleans for Happy Hour, a part of the family of shows on the podcast network. It's NewOrleans.com, brought to you in part today by Petite Pet Care, dog walking and pet sitting. Love and care when you're not there. How many of you guys have got pets at home right now? Everybody around the table has got a pet. Oh, you don't have one. Ruby, you're the only person.
I'm very sad.
Do you have one, plants. Julia? Plants. These guys do not look after your plants. You'll have to water your plants yourself. But everyone else has got a pet, so you can have these people take loving care of your pet when you're not there. Someone could be walking your dog right now for you and cooking dinner for you at the same time. More information can be found at petitepetcare.com, or you can give them a call at 504-309-PET. When you walk into a bar in New Orleans and you pull up a bar stool, you never know who's going to be sitting on either side of you. What you do know is no matter what they look like, what they're wearing, whether they just got out of a limo or just got out of jail, they're going to be happy to talk to you, because that's New Orleans. And this is Happy Hour, a cocktail-fueled 60 minutes of random conversation with folks who have nothing in common other than we're all New Orleanians in a bar here at Casa Borrega. Hello, everybody around the table.
Hey, hello.
The fabulous Douglas Lingle is taking photos of us as we speak. My special guests here today at Happy Hour are, in no particular order, this order, actually, Carrie Roy. Hello, Carrie.
Hello, how are you?
Carrie, I'm good. How are you?
Grant.
You shouldn't have to ask me how I am.
No, I know.
I'm sure you've heard all these jokes 100
times. Every single one.
Carrie is a third-generation psychic and medium with 20 years experience plus, helping others with her unique abilities. Carrie has been featured on The Today Show, A&E, the Traveler Discovery Channels, and was recently named Best Psychic to See in New Orleans by the Travel Channel. Okay, listen to this, you guys. And the Best Psychic to See in the USA.
Whoa,
that's the country.
Wow.
The best psychic that we're sitting, you are sitting with the best psychic in the whole country, as determined by no less an authority than BBC America.
True.
Holy crap. That's, I know. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's worth a round of applause.
It really was.
You're the best psychic
in
America.
Crikey. It's
crikey,
BBC.
Yeah. What did you think about that? Did you put your fees up instantly?
No.
You haven't.
I know. I need to hire you as my manager.
Do you have a manager? Because I'm available.
Really?
Oh, okay. I do the show an hour a week. I've got a lot of time to spare.
We can figure this out, actually.
This is going to be great. I've already got a job. How's it going to work out? Can you tell?
It'll be fine.
It's going to be great, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Carrie's based in New Orleans. Her office is in the CBD, and her clients range from psychiatrists to CEOs, celebrities, and stay-home moms. Do you really have psychiatrists?
I really do, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
and in case you don't want to listen to any more of the show and you think this is a bunch of crap, you can go check out Carrie's website. It's NewOrleansPsychic.com.
Yes, it is.
Wow, this is going to be a very interesting hour. Have you guys all got questions you'd like to have answered by the psychic?
Oh,
the best psychic.
Yeah. I thought about it.
Everybody's got one.
Ruby wants to know when she's going to get a pet.
And the male voice you heard, you're the only guy here besides me, Kevin.
Yeah, I am.
Hey, there, things are picking up for us. It's Kevin McClinn Jr. Kevin McClinn is a New Orleans actor, screenwriter, and film producer after completing a master's degree in entertainment business from Full Sail University. Kevin teamed up with his classmates to write, produce, and act in his first independent feature film, The Station. That's interesting. After you did a film business degree, you didn't actually go into the business. You went to the wrong end of the business, the creative end.
The creative end.
Why didn't you go to the money end?
Well, it's still both in my area, as producer and writer.
I guess so, yeah.
Writer, it's, you know, 100% creativity. Producer, it's really 99.8% business, and the rest is a little bit of creativity.
So you can do it all?
Yeah.
Come on, all right.
I'm trying to go back to the old age, the golden age of Hollywood, where you can do it all.
Yeah.
I just can't sing.
Well.
Yet.
There you go.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
I predict.
So listen, Kevin currently has several TV and feature film projects in production that include the animated series Dirty Springs University and a feature film called Loco Amigos.
Yeah.
In his free time, Kevin enjoys international travel, going to movies, and spending time with family and friends. How many friends have you got?
A lot.
A lot of friends.
A lot of friends.
So it wastes a lot of time. Then.
Good thing for Facebook.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you don't spend much time with your friends if you're on Facebook. That is the worst.
Well, I have friends all over.
Isn't it totally the worst?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I have friends all over, though. So I have friends in New York, L.A., D.C.
Do you have anyone in Kuala Lumpur or Beijing or anything?
Actually, I had a friend in Beijing that played basketball there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is he the tallest guy in China?
He might be. I don't know.
How tall was he? How tall are you? You're 6'1".
I'm 6'2".
6'2"? You've gone up.
Yeah. My dad's 6'1", so it's like if I could see over his head, I'm taller. I'm like a little bit older.
You're 6'2".
I'm the second shortest in my family.
Wow.
On my dad's side of the family. My other uncles and grandfather was like 6'4", 6'6". Yeah.
Well, that's some tall genes. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. And listen, our music guests here are three wonderful looking women who are all sitting along in a row. The name of the band is Pyeya, which is spelled P-Y-E-Y-A, which is, I guess you don't have a manager, right?
No, that's right.
You might have two jobs.
I got two gigs on both sides of the table here. That's a very difficult name to say, so I was wondering who came up with that idea to call it.
Well, Pyeya is a made-up word.
Even
to
crazier.
Our chagrin, we thought it was the word for sing in Bulgarian, but that's actually Pyeya. But then once we realized it, we'd already kind of went too far with it, so we're stuck with Pyeya.
You're stuck with it.
And that makes us more searchable. If you
it's
look
true.
For
Sam,
oh, there's nobody
can
else
Google
called Pyeya.
There's no,
yeah.
though.
We are
I've spoken to a lot of guys who regret coming up with a stupid band name over the years. The Goo Goo Dolls, I know those guys were sorry. they were very upset that they came up with a stupid name.
Well, we were sort of happy to find out that at least it wasn't some other word, that it was
it doesn't
a made-up
mean, it
word.
Doesn't
right.
mean,
right.
It doesn't mean like hemorrhaging,
yeah,
like
exactly.
suffering or something. Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, so the three women in this band are an international, all-female folk trio. You're not an international folk trio, really, because you're all American, right?
We sing international folk music.
That's what it means.
That's
okay,
nice.
I thought you were going to be all foreigners and I was going to have to translate.
I grew up overseas.
Where did you grow up at? This is the voice of Annalisa.
Yeah, in about 11 different cities in Europe.
Well, the name like Annalisa Kelly, maybe it was Ireland you were in.
No, never Ireland.
None of them.
Yeah, and I'm not. I must be Irish, you know, far back there, but not that I know of anyway. Kelly's is a coincidence.
So what countries did you grow up in?
Do you want the list? Italy, mm-hmm. Russia, Finland. Then Yugoslavia, my one Balkan connection, Austria, Turkey, Belgium, and America.
Annie is our international part of
that. That would
but I'm
qualify.
American. I'm American.
Why were you, was your parents in the military or something?
State Department. I went to a military school. I had
State
military
Department.
Friends.
CIA. That was the voice of Carrie Roy. CIA,
she must just know.
Whoever's listening into this.
Oh, yeah, that's the psychic saying that, so you know.
Really? What, who was working for the State Department, your dad or your mom?
My dad.
What did he do?
He did public affairs. If a journalist had a question about, you know, America's stance on something,
he'd make it up.
He'd call back and go, oh, is this okay? And then he'd say, oh, yes, it's okay.
So he was a spokesperson.
He was at one point. Mostly he was just, you know, in the
CIA.
But then he's, you know, big Russia file. And so now he's doing stuff with Russia. And now he's actually recruiting people for the State Department.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where is he? What part of the country?
Illinois.
So if I wanted to get a job for the State Department, would I?
Go to Illinois or Indiana or Wisconsin.
What's his email address?
Can't give
it's
out
to be. It's got to be public information, surely, doesn't it?
Do you want his email address?
If anyone's listening,
that's his job.
State.gov. At
state.gov. I hope he doesn't get inundated.
I hope he does.
Or
because
maybe he does, yeah.
Couldn't we get 10%?
10%
of referrals, you know, like we get two interviews for free.
That's
not
a good membership.
Yeah. That was Annalisa Kelly. Sitting next to Annalisa is Ruby Ross.
Yes.
Okay, I got that right.
You did.
It's very complicated having three people in a band.
I understand.
Looking at all these names. Now, Ruby, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Virginia, in Charlottesville, Virginia. And my dad was up in Vermont, so I was between the two.
Okay.
And then I lived in Boston for a little while
and then
came down to New Orleans.
They're all cold places till you got here. Good thing.
Virginia is cold and hot.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's hot in the summer.
Hot in the summer.
See,
it does get cold.
Right.
But Boston winters, I spent one there and that was enough.
That was
and
plenty,
then I came down
I bet
here,
it was.
So.
And the last member of Pyeya is Julia Michaels, who's got the strongest handshake of any woman I've ever shaken.
Nice, Julia.
I think it was
good.
My sister who told me that I needed to have a strong handshake so that I could, you know, have a good presence when I'm meeting
it's
people.
It's true.
So.
It impressed me.
Thank you.
Do you work out or something? You just naturally
well,
strong.
Well, I do a little rock climbing sometimes.
A
so
little
I think I got
rock climbing. Is there such a thing as a little rock?
Well, ever since I moved to New Orleans, there hasn't been a ton of rock climbing. I mostly climb oak trees now because it's the
really?
Closest I can get. So.
You're not kidding, right? You do.
No, I actually was climbing
actually
one
climb
earlier
right?
today. Yeah.
What street was that on?
Racing Camp, the little park right there with the fountain. Yeah.
You climb the oak trees in Racing Camp Street.
Yeah, sure.
Does anyone ever say anything? Or you just?
Oh, well, I mean, there's always, like, little kids climbing, so I'll just, you know, blend
yeah.
with them.
There's that
creature. Wow. Isn't there, like, a rock climbing, indoor rock climbing joint
in
somewhere?
In Slidell. The one that was
too
on
far away.
Close, so.
So you girls all met each other at Wesleyan
mm-hmm.
University,
mm-hmm.
and you formed PA after moving to New Orleans, it says here.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what's the deal with Should we just start in? Okay, here we go. This is the real show here. Okay, wait. What the hell is the Balkans?
It's a region in Europe in, in southeastern Europe. So it's, you know, from Croatia to Bulgaria, pretty much.
Did you guys know this, by the way? So
yeah.
Yes. Kevin, did you know what the Balkans was?
No, I had no idea.
No, I see. Carrie, did you really know that?
Yeah, gypsy music. Yeah.
Gypsy music.
Okay. Yeah, that's Romania. That's
Sometimes people mishear us and think that we said Vulcan, like Star Trek. I swear, it's happened to me multiple times.
Yeah. I did have to take a second.
We should encourage that.
That would be awesome. Get a bunch of Trekkies at our concert. They'd be sorely disappointed, though.
Wear the shirts.
By the time they got there. Yeah. And you could give them your Vulcan hand grip.
Exactly.
Oh my God. That's right.
Or walk on stage and just give the Vulcan
hand
grip.
Exactly.
Look at that. Nice work.
I have a Star Trek shirt, actually. Oh, you know,
nice. Like the actual thing from the show.
Yeah.
I think cheap thrift store knockoff, but right. Yeah.
Where did you buy that? Sweden?
That was my boyfriend bought it somewhere. I don't know where. But
so you'll have boyfriends as well?
We do, actually. Look at that.
Aww.
What kind of guys are commonly attracted to women who sing Balkan music?
Do they have anything in common?
I don't know. Mine's a weirdo.
Is he?
They're all kind of weirdos.
Yeah.
They're all lovable weirdos.
Yeah.
In their own ways.
Yeah. Actually, my boyfriend has New Zealand citizenship. I have a detection of...
There you go.
But he grew up here.
How did he get New Zealand citizenship?
His dad is from New Zealand. Although now he's an American citizen. But yeah, he grew up in New Zealand. He's a doctor. He's lived here for, I think, 30 years. And I guess if your dad's New Zealander, then you become...
I guess you can
get
a passport. So your dad is a New Zealander who's a doctor. Is he at Children's Hospital?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Everyone tells me about this guy, but I've never... Because I'm from New Zealand, so everyone
That's
asks me,
so
do you know anyone else from New Zealand?
Like,
no.
Oh, my gosh.
No, we don't at all. He's from Auckland?
No, are you from Auckland?
I'm from Christchurch, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think his family is from Christchurch. Well, I could be wrong about that, actually. I'm not sure.
Call him up right now. People told me about this guy for years. I've been here for 20-something years, and I've heard about this guy.
He's a good talker, very good conversationalist.
We should have him on the show.
Yeah, he would be on the show. Yes. Oh, I'm sure.
Yes. Okay, so what is... I mean, I guess we're just going to make you do it. Just going to make you sing a song. So we get the idea of what Balkan... And do you normally have instruments?
No, not for most of our songs. Yeah, we do have a drum on a couple of songs, but mostly we just do a cappella music.
It's traditionally sung a cappella, a lot of it.
By women's choirs.
By the original Balkan. Women's choirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is just mysterious, isn't it?
Well, that's funny because one of the bigger ones is called, I'm going to butcher the name. It's in French, Le Mystère du Voix.
Le Mystère du Voix Bulgare.
Yeah, you speak French, that's right.
Okay. What is that?
Which means the mystery of the Bulgarian voices.
You nailed the adjective.
Okay. The mystery of the Bulgarian voices.
Yes. It was one of the first
so
groups
mysterious?
That popularized.
Oh, we should just not explain and sing instead. Keep it.
Well, what are you going to sing for us today?
Do you want something upbeat or more?
Well, something that
we should do mysterious.
Oh, mysterious. All right. Mysterious. I guess that should be Icino.
Yeah, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Is it okay if we do like a slower song? Like it's a little.
Well, that's okay with me. What do you guys think?
Sure. Yeah.
A lullaby.
Sure, you can do whatever you feel like. You think it'll fit the mood of sitting in a bar drinking margaritas?
No.
No, not at all.
What, transport us to Bulgaria?
Bulgaria, as long as drinking is involved, I'm sure it'll fit.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, this one is a lullaby. Yeah. Don't fall asleep.
Večer jaj sino, večer jaj sino, ta legaj. Mene najo maj činko, tvoja na blaga. Na malka moja.
Is that shocking?
It is really crazy to sing while listening to
yourself.
It's
hard, actually.
Oh, with headphones?
Yeah. Oh, you can take the headphones. Never experienced that before.
You can take, you can take them off, by the way.
No, it's kind of cool. I mean, I was like, damn.
Have you recorded this stuff before?
Not really.
Although I just, by the way, I haven't told them yet. I got an offer for us to be recorded, so there you go.
You got a record. You got a record deal. You didn't bother telling the other girls.
Yeah, sorry.
This is
she saved it for the show.
Well, congratulations. That's quite a big deal.
Yeah, well, no, I wouldn't call it a record deal. It's a guy who's a fan of ours who has recording equipment who wants to record us. So.
Well, yeah. You can tell him you've already worn headphones now. So
yeah,
you,
that's right. We know.
It's
how
like you've been in a studio practically. Yeah. That's so funny that you never heard yourself. What did you think hearing it back to yourself like that? Hearing everyone else's voice?
The balance was so different.
Right.
Because you normally only can hear your own voice, I suppose.
Yeah. It was interesting. I'm going to be curious to hear it later on, you know, as a podcast.
I couldn't concentrate. I was just like listening to it.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah.
It sounded beautiful.
Thank you.
How did you figure out you could do this, the three of you? Alcohol involved?
That actually helps me. I don't know about Ruby and Annie, but...
Ruby, yeah, you brought us into it.
Right, yeah, so I first found out about the music. There was a group that came through Virginia, through Charlottesville when I was in high school, a group that was actually based in Vermont that does folk music from all over the world, and so heard them sing. I was like, that's awesome. And then saw in the program that they did singing camps in the summer. And I was like, oh my gosh, sign me up. And so, so I went and did a singing camp and started learning how to sing this music from them, from this group called Village Harmony. And then when I went to college, I wanted to keep singing that music. And so started a group there. And both of these ladies ended up in it at one time or another. And
then you three of you happened to all move to New Orleans?
Yeah,
or was that
they moved here before me. They didn't know each other. They didn't overlap at all.
You didn't even know each other?
No.
Annalisa and Julia.
No. Yep.
So when I came down, I talked to both of them independently. They were like, hey, we should get together and sing just for old time's sake. And I was like, oh, well, actually, there's three of us, and it's mostly three-part music.
Wow.
We should totally do that.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Carrie, how would you explain something like that?
Synchronicity.
Is there such a thing as coincidence?
Yeah, not coincidence, synchronicity. Yeah, I don't think there is such a thing as coincidence.
There's not.
No, so I think there's a little bit of chaos that runs around in the world that may cause what we call coincidence. But primarily, I just think that it's all well woven together.
And what does the grand design come from?
Whoa, I need another drink for that one.
Wow, you haven't even you got tons of this one. Exactly. I'll get you another one. What would you like?
The grand design. Boy, that's a loaded question. I think that it is our reason for being here is to grow individually, and I think that collectively we help each other do that. Mm. And so I think that most of the stories of our lives are very much like three-part harmony. So I think it works with that. Mm. You know, is that I need this voice in order to have this expression. I need this voice to have this expression. And so different people come along, and we connect with each other so that we can create something beautiful. And that could be my moment. That could be your moment. That could be your moment. It should be all of our moments. But I would say that it, interestingly, having someone here in film, I often suggest to people, why don't you step back for a minute and look at your life as though it's an independent film and you're a very interesting character. And then how do you feel about it? Mm-hmm. You know? Because mm-hmm. that's really what I think it is.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, I think we're characters that come together to have a storyline. My life is an interesting storyline. Your life, I'm sure, is an interesting storyline, as are everybody else in the room and in this city for certain. And so I think that's just the way it happens, is that we draw in those people into our lives that are going to make the best story. So I'm not exactly sure who the casting agent is. I argue with that casting agent from time to time. But
so when this, so the coincidences, such as they are not, are created by ourselves. We're not part of some grand predetermined system.
I'm not. I actually don't have the answer to that, and I'm glad that I don't have
the
answer
to that.
Come on,
you're the best psychic in America.
I am. According to
the BBC,
America,
it's a pretty major authority.
But I don't think I do have the answer, and I think that's better. The people that have the answer and really believe that they know what this whole thing is, they scare me a little bit. Mm. I'm always open to learning more. So
you're it says in the bio, which is true, I suppose, that you're the third generation.
I am.
So what does that mean?
My grandfather was an astrologer and a numerologist. My mother was a psychic and a medium, and I came along and became a psychic and a medium too.
Do you have kids?
Nope.
So it's the end of the line for the
yep
for the Roy psychic family.
Yeah, well,
unless you adopt these three girls here.
Yeah. No. I look at it as I think it's difficult for people to help a lot of people and then help. I have more of a kind of a macrocosm in my helping, and I just am cool with that. Everybody's my family. Everybody's my kid.
Yeah. So how did you first discover it?
I was about 7 years old, and I was at my house, and I started talking to somebody sitting in a chair. And from the conversation, my mother understood what was going on, and I was having a conversation with somebody that wasn't there. And so she...
Well, most seven-year-olds do that, though.
Well, no, mine was pretty detailed, and the chair itself started to rock, and so it was... And my mother... This is what my mother did as a gig, so she kind of
right,
knew
so you
what
knew,
was going
yeah,
on. And I wasn't just mimicking it. I mean, they were pretty careful not to, try to put something on me. I was allowed to be what... At that point, I thought I was going to design playgrounds. That's what I really was interested in doing at 7 years old. That was my pick. It's going to be an engineer of playgrounds.
We need better playgrounds. I really don't like playgrounds now.
We need them. We could make them all trees and rock places where we can climb. I spent such a large of my part of my childhood sitting in trees. I just love that. But
you do too.
Yeah. See? Ooh, synchronicity. But so she saw what was going on. I also did weird things, like I could tell when somebody was going to call. I knew who it was. I knew who was going to be at the door. I knew answers to questions before teachers asked the full question.
Handy. Did you know the exam?
Sometimes I did. Wow. I was really, really good at school.
So let's go through.
I was academically pretty good.
Let's go through all the stupid questions that people ask you.
Okay, sure.
What do they start with? The Powerball numbers and the horse races?
Oh, the Powerball number. That's the one that I love. My response to that is, if I could pick the lottery, do you think I'd be sitting here talking to you right now?
What are the frequently
asked
questions?
I'd be on my island right now.
Okay, so that's you can't.
Well,
do that one.
You'll
horse
say
race
something.
Is same thing.
The whole thing where you knew that already, but of course you knew that already.
Right.
As though this is all right. You walk around with a microphone and earphones on 24/7, right? So that's just what you do all the time. I have moments where I just like to not be psychic too.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next. Actually, does it crash in on you your whole life?
You were going to ask me that.
Touche.
Do
you find it crashes in on you all the time and you can't stop picking up stuff like, what Kevin's thinking about right now, which is embarrassing?
No. I don't want to know everything. I don't really need to know the minutia, right? Stuff up there, honey. No.
What's he thinking
like that.
About?
Actually, I think he's got some other things that are going on this evening that he's thinking about, too. He's got
That's because he's from texting.
I didn't see that, but...
No, I'm just kidding. No. Do you have stuff going on tonight that you have to juggle?
I'm writing a script right now. It's a horror/thriller. Ooh. Takes place in New Orleans. It's kind of, it's a horror type script. So it's, I try to think of funny things so my life won't be all horrorness.
So you're absorbed by the script, so you keep thinking about it all the time.
Yeah. It's kind of like how you said. It's like it comes to you and you see it and you just don't know. It's like, I'm like a guy with a computer sitting in the corner, sitting in the corner while everybody is doing their thing, and I just decide to take that and what people are doing and listening and write it, and then trying to create horror scenes is really, I'm not that type of person that likes gore that much. Then try to create that.
Why are you writing a horror film if you don't like it?
Well, as a writer, I said to myself I wanted to. Like know which genre I'm really strong in, so I said I was gonna do like two scripts for each genre.
Okay.
So romance, I haven't gotten to romance yet. I'm staying away from that right now. but I'm comedy, action.
What's the station?
Station is a comedy.
Is that? That's a comedy.
It's a comedy. It's a kind of dark, I wouldn't say too dark, but it's kind of comedy. Can't really take it too serious. My character is Tony. He comes in on his last day in his pajamas and locks himself in the radio station, and so he's saying whatever he wants to say.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cheap, too, I suppose. There's one set there.
Yeah, one set, one location. That's why we try to keep it. It was a low budget. The budget was like $11,000, and so we took $8,500, $1,000 towards location, and Everything else went to the crew and food. So.
Mm. That's a pretty cheap movie, $11,000. So you wouldn't take much to get your money back on that if you sold it to somebody. What do you do now then? It's out. It's on Vimeo. You can watch the whole thing on Vimeo.
Yeah, you can watch it for like $2 on Vimeo on demand. While I'm not promoting the station, I'm writing, working on like Dirty Springs is a cartoon that's coming out. It should be on Fundat.com.
On Fundat?
Yeah, crowdfunding.
Yeah.
So far right now we have the drawings complete, the story, the voices. The voices, everybody's from New Orleans. It's all comedians in New Orleans. Ah. Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty ambitious project, making an animation. Or can you do it on computer now and it just does itself, kind of? Or do you have to do it all by hand? Like,
I have somebody that does it. Like, I have, that's the thing about producing. You can go out and find people for certain things. And
you can go to a bar and have a margarita while the sucker's at home drawing stuff.
Right.
Good deal.
Yeah, like that. But, you know, being the boss, you over it. So you have to be.
Are you paying this guy?
Yeah, definitely.
What's it about, Dirty Springs?
You know? Dirty Springs is about college. It's about these two guys, Clifford and B. Black, that goes to college. And they're experiencing what we all experience when we go to college, a little bit more. So it's fun.
So
it's class.
Is it short for the web? Are they like webisodes? Or is it going to be a full feature-length film?
It's not going to be a film. It's going to be like a 30-minute episodes. Okay. You know?
Oh, to see for TV, say?
Yeah, we want to do it for TV. Trying to hopefully we get it onto Adult Swim or something like that.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, and then I have Local Amigos, film that I'm producing.
Loco Amigos?
Yes.
Let's have a guess at what genre that one is.
Comedy.
Comedy?
Yeah, I didn't write this one, though. I'm helping out as a producer. I read the script, fell in love with it, helped develop it to make it a little bit stronger. And so far, it's on Fundat right now, gaining funds. And
Fundat is a local New Orleans crowdsourcing thing, like Kickstarter, but for New Orleans only projects. Right. We had that guy,
Alex Macondo. Yeah, that was just with him last night. One good friend of mine.
He's great.
Yeah.
And this was his idea. It's a pretty cool idea. It's it's Kickstarter for New Orleans.
Right.
And it seems to be working out pretty well.
It was doing real well for him.
So how much money do you need? We can get people to kick some in.
We need for, let's see, Dirty Springs University, we need $8,000. And then for Local Amigos, same thing, around $8,000.
Okay. So what do we get if we give you like $20 or something? What do we get for it?
Well, for Dirty Springs, for Dirty Springs, you're going to get a T-shirt. You get like a character giving you like a little letterhead saying thank you. But then you get a little bit higher. You could get like your email, your voicemails by a character.
Oh, that's cool.
Saying this person's not here, and have a little comedic with it.
Okay.
If you give like about $200-$300, you get a street named after you. You get a building on a campus named after you.
That's great. That's
so,
yeah.
So
very cool.
So in the higher it goes, you get named stuff, be named off after certain people and all, and hopefully we'll start that soon.
That's cool. So Carrie's mom was a psychic, and your dad was in the same kind of business as you, Kevin McLean Sr.
Yeah, you did your homework.
You know what I did before I came here? Like literally about 5 minutes before Chris and I came here, I just Googled your name, and Kevin McLean Sr. came up.
Yeah,
my father. I thought, he looked exactly like you, actually.
Yeah, he can never say I'm not his son.
It's amazing. it's uncanny. I thought it was you, and it said that he was a spokesperson for Michael Jackson, the superstar.
Yeah, from 97 until his death, That was, that was a crazy experience.
So you got to meet Michael, I assume.
Yeah.
Well, here we go.
Call the house.
Okay. What's that? He would call you.
He used to call from my father. He would call my dad at the house, and that's before like cell phones really started getting popular.
So you had to speak to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here we go. That Everyone's got two questions. Annalisa, you've got two questions about Michael Jackson starting now.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, dear. I don't have a question about Michael. I'm just in awe.
Who in the world does not have a question about Michael Jackson? I don't believe it.
Well, did you ever have a meal with him? What was his favorite food?
Oh, meal. I never had a meal with him, but my father definitely has plenty of times. He likes grits, New Orleans-style grits.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
There you go. Already we found out something we need to hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's grits. I was surprised. I was like, you have all this money in the world, and you want New Orleans grits. Like, really?
Good question, Annalisa. Did you have a follow-up?
Oh, man. How'd your dad get involved in that? How did he meet Michael Jackson?
Let's see. He was probably about 15, 16 years old, and he found out that they were at a hotel downtown, and he went down there dressed up like he was a guitar member, a member in the group, and he snuck into the elevator where Tito and Jermaine and the rest of the brothers were, and he slipped them his demo tape, and they lost it. But they remembered his number, and they called my dad, and then, you know, started a whole relationship from, like, I think 18 to, like, now. He still talks.
And that was in 97, so he was already huge,
right?
Yeah. So, and that worked? You know, the little slipping.
Well, no. This happened back in, like, let's see how long ago my dad met him. This was, like, about 60s, in the 60s. And Mike was, like, 14 at the time. Yeah.
From the age of, so they knew each other when they were teenagers. Did they hang out when they were teenagers?
I wouldn't say hang out. He was always in the studio. My dad was trying to do the same thing as him, was do music. And so he was trying to get a record deal, and Joseph ended up being my father's manager of a group called Windjammer. And in the station, when you watch the station, the actual song is the first song you hear in the movie. So when the movie kicks in, you hear Tossing and Turning from Windjammer, which is kind of funny that my dad was doing music, and I remember that when I was a kid, and then years later, over 20 some years later, now it's in my film. So it's kind of
cheap rights clearance.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the main thing. Okay, yeah. So that was your two questions, Annalise. We're moving down the table. Ruby, what two quick questions do you have about Michael Jackson for Kevin?
Did he ever teach you any dance moves?
No, definitely not. But he knows that my dad always be throwing me under the bus with people. Celebrities be like, "Oh, my son definitely loved you. He did this dance move just like you," and he started laughing. So I'm like, I'm a joke.
Did you actually try and dance like Michael Jackson?
Who hasn't? As a kid. Everybody wants to moonwalk. Everybody wants to kick their leg out.
Can you moonwalk?
I have, well, my socks on.
On the moonwalk? Down at the moonwalk?
Ruby, do you have a follow-up, or you want to...
I'll cede to Julia if you have a burning question.
Julia, you have a question about Michael Jackson for Kevin? Come on.
Well, I guess your main interaction was on the phone with him. Is that sort of what you were saying?
Yeah, as a kid, because he called the house, and my dad, like, take the phone, and then on a plane somewhere.
Oh, so he was calling just to, like, business. Beckon him to,
his business, so then, you know, like, celebrities call at strange times at night.
Yeah, I was going to ask. That was my question. Did he call like 4 a.m.? Like, was it?
I remember I was in high school. I think I was like a sophomore, and like I know I had like a Spanish test that morning, and he called like at like 2 in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, "Oh, sorry, it was Mike." I was like, "Is he going to take my test for me?" Yeah, I need a test. I need an A.
I can't imagine the teacher accepting that excuse.
Right. No,
sorry.
Really can't.
Michael Jackson kept me from doing my homework.
Hey, what did your dad do? He was his spokesperson?
Yeah, he was a spokesperson. First, he was guitarist, songwriter, producer. And when that stopped, he became my... he was teaching, and he went into being PR, and he did PR for Michael Jackson.
So you're like taking his role now, like at this table, because we're asking you all these stupid questions that probably your father must have had to answer. Like
probably so.
So he was doing it in the mid-90s?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much the height of the craziness. When he was sleeping in the hyperbaric chamber and hair caught on fire on the Pepsi commercial.
I think
you remember that?
My dad was in L.A. when that happened. He was in the studio when they got called with Joseph when that happened. So that's like, you know.
When the hair caught on fire.
Yeah, when that situation happened.
Okay, so Carrie, you have any questions? Because I've got 100.
Well, it's interesting because I was sitting here thinking about him calling in the middle of the night. I was picking that up, that was going to be one of the things that got... I really was. I'm curious about his generosity. Did he, like, buy planes for your dad? Did you get, like, a super cool slide maybe for your family on Christmas or anything cool like that?
One time, what was it? It was something that came out. We had it before it came out. The portable DVD player, where you could walk around and bring it. Like, I would never forget it. Like, my dad treated that thing like a person with a car with no insurance. Don't move it. Let it stay right there. You move it, it messes up. We can't bring it nowhere. We get it fixed. So he had it hooked up to the TV, and it never moved. So yeah, a DVD player, I think that was one of the first things I remember.
Okay, so now Michael Jackson is dead. We all know that. So can anybody be sued if you say anything about him? Because he's dead, so he's not going to sue you, and his family's not going to sue you or anything, right?
State probably.
Do you know the inside story about all this crap? Did he really father those children? Were they his kids?
From what I know of, it's his.
No. Okay.
They have his attitude from what I hear.
Do they? Do you know the kids as well?
Well, no, I don't. No, my dad had, my dad met Prince when he was younger, and then around that time, my father stayed at home. It was getting around the time for around Katrina, so it was, my dad kind of started staying home a lot, working-wise, and then, you know, Katrina happened. So
but he was still a spokesperson up to the very end when he died, that awful.
I have no doubt that they're his kids. I'm just... You know, not so sure about the way that they came about, but I'm sure genetically they're his.
Oh, you mean it was more of a sort of turkey baster question?
I'm sure it would be more sophisticated than that.
I have no clue what goes on behind people's doors.
That's a good spokesperson.
There's no reason why he wouldn't have sex with a woman, though. I mean, is there? I mean, it's not that difficult to do that.
You're Michael Jackson, right? He's Michael Jackson. You're the king of pop. Who wouldn't? Yeah. Like
if you have all of these kind of, Howard Hughes had a lot of those same silly kind of idiosyncrasies, and so he may not have wanted to go through that process, you know, in that way, if you want to
kind of. Sort of icky?
And you never know what you, that's how feel about it.
How did he meet that woman?
I mean, he walked around with a mask and gloves. I mean, so he wasn't really into intimacy, I wouldn't think.
Oh, he was. From what I always ask that question, why the gloves? And he was more worried about getting sick from people.
Well, yeah.
Like catching a
cold.
Well,
that's what he's germophobic.
Yeah, germophobic.
Outside.
Howard Hughes kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Outside type of thing. Like going outside in the public.
Well, that's mental problems, right?
Well, if you think about it, if you have 100,000 people running at you all at the same time trying to touch you.
Right.
You don't want to be, you know...
I think a mask would be the least of your problems.
I don't want to say you want to be an ass by not shaking anybody's hand, not saying, you know, hello, how you doing, thank you. Because I know during All-Star Weekend, I was downtown and I saw celebrities, I saw basketball players, I saw Steve Kerr walking down the street. And I was like, oh, Steve Kerr, he came, he shook my hand. So now think about it. If you that famous... And one person comes up to you. Now, think about you, Michael Jackson. You got tons of people crying for you. You know, you don't know where their hands has been. You don't know where some people probably digging in. Oh, Michael Jackson.
It must be the most unbearable thing. You're like he's like a prisoner. Where you can't go anywhere in the world. You couldn't go anywhere without someone staring at you, yelling out your name or whatever. Yeah. That just must be crazy.
It comes with the territory when you have the number one album.
You should be his posthumous spokesperson.
Yeah, really. He's doing such a great job.
Okay.
Really doing a good job.
One more question. What's up with the color of his skin and all that crap? What's the truth about all that?
I would say the truth is that he had a skin problem.
Aha!
Vitiligo.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
He
wasn't crazy and got his skin bleached.
Right.
He had some
vitiligo
sort of...
is like, it's patches.
Yeah, it's patches. So he just went ahead and just got the whole thing done. Because if you look at that time, that's what, the late 80s, early 90s, when all that started happening between the Bad album and the Dangerous album. So that's, you know... At that time, you had the AIDS craze. You had a lot of disease crazes going on. So if you that famous and you're in the eye, you got little patches here and there. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, they're afraid if someone said someone has the flu in the same restaurant. Everybody's like, ooh, I don't know, touch me. So you see, you know, that happens.
Got to say, you are very good. You've inherited this. PRG, because that's all got to be bullshit, I'm sure. Because the fact is that he had that hideous plastic surgery that completely changed his appearance. He didn't look anything like that. Mm-hmm. Anyone can see that.
Right.
But he just happened to have vitiligo and bleached his skin because of that. That doesn't sound believable to me, Kevin.
Then you get a little bit of, you know, touched of, can I get, you know, this little touch up here?
Yeah, but what I'm saying, someone who's obsessed with their appearance to that extent, they would totally change their look. It doesn't seem unlikely that they would also want a different skin color if they could get one for whatever reason.
Well, and his sisters, you know, have kind of followed the same. They must have caught the disease.
Yeah, he
they
and
all,
Janet.
They all fairly.
Merging.
Yeah,
right.
Well, and LaToya, really? Girl.
They all have plastic surgery, or they all have light skin.
It's the Hollywood thing. It's,
it is.
You know, you know, Hollywood, you can see if people like Beyonce, for example, she on one cover she looks darker, and on one cover she looks lighter. Mm-hmm. That's, you know.
And the blonde hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we all trying to fight for a position and, you know, the perfect look, which is really no perfect look,
right?
Because we all born different.
Creating our realities, that's just what people do now. Also externally, they make themselves whatever they want to be. So
there's nothing wrong with that, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know,
unless everyone in the world's sharing it, you're going, what's wrong with that person? Mm-hmm. I mean, create. We all want to be something. We all want to be what we want to be, don't we? I mean, whatever mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. But most of us don't can't afford and don't have plastic surgery. We try and change from the inside, I guess, or our hair color or our clothes.
Mm-hmm. And then people, it seems that now it is the expectation, you know, that we look a certain way, you know, that 30 is that, what do they say, 50 is the new 30 or 70 is the new 50 or, mm-hmm. you know, it's... If you can buy it, then it's true.
How do you combat that?
I think that train has left the station. And
too
I'm
late.
I'm not so sure that that's going to happen.
There's nothing
now.
We can yeah, do. We're just trapped in this.
I'd like to say worshiping differently, but youth. I don't think so.
Well, why couldn't we worship old age instead of worshiping youth? That'd be a lot easier. We wouldn't have to have plastic surgery that way.
I agree it would be easier, but there wouldn't be so much money being made.
And yeah, well, there is that.
Keeping everyone on the teetering on the edge of insanity.
Besides being a psychic, you're also a medium, right? You talk to dead people as well.
Yeah, should I try to raise Michael? I think that he's
oh, my
enough.
God. Oh, wow.
Yes.
Whoa.
Oh,
could you
goodness.
Do it?
He's like, please leave me alone. I'm dead now. Come on.
Hey, hang on a minute. I would never have thought of that. Could you get in touch with Michael Jackson right now?
I can get in touch with what is the essence of Michael Jackson, yes.
Right now while we're sitting here.
I mean, why not? It's really not much of a difference between him and, you know, somebody's mom. You know, they're just people who were here and who are no longer here. You know, so
they're accessible. Everybody in the world who's ever died, you can access them?
I would say yes. I really don't go around trying to do it when I'm not asked, but... yeah, I believe that they are. I don't see why one would be and the other isn't. I mean, just
well, let's whistle Michael up then.
Sure. Let me think about that. Try to connect with him. This is I have never done Michael Jackson before, but this is a first.
Okay.
Right here, I may have to
have another sip of that cocktail.
Yeah. You might not.
I mean, I'm just getting a little nervous meeting him. You know, even now that he's not here. I mean, he's still superstar.
Well, you can say you're a friend of Kevin's. So you're
I
in.
I could.
Yeah.
You don't have to be
well,
nervous.
Well, first off, he says thank you, Kevin, for speaking such wonderful words of truth about me, and taking my back here, even though I wasn't. You know. Mm-hmm. But I feel that for Michael Jackson, what I get for him is that he's totally happy that he's not here anymore. I don't think this was a pleasant experience for him, obviously. But, I mean, I really feel that when I kind of tap into that idea of the essence of Michael Jackson, what I feel is that he felt tremendously misunderstood. And that some of the things that he was accused of, I don't really feel like he did do. I think he just kind of went along with it because it was just... At that point, Michael Jackson was no longer, you stop being an individual when you're that famous. You know, you become a product, you become an entity other than, like what you and I sit and have to worry about our individual lives. You don't have any real control over that anymore. And so I think that he really gave up. I think he gave up a long time ago. I think he gave up pre-plastic surgery. I think that who that little boy was and who the man was that died were, really if I was to tap into Michael Jackson and connect with his spirit, and the part of Michael Jackson that part passed very, very long ago. It had nothing to do with the
Are you picking this up from
stuff.
Are you picking this
from,
up from
the energy from of what I feel when I connect to that. Yeah. Is and I wouldn't have thought that before. But basically that's what he's saying. I died at about 12.
Wow.
Wow, that's deep.
That's heavy, yeah.
It usually is, you know?
Yeah.
It usually is. That's what the
And do you have conversations with people who have passed like this?
I mean, do, yeah. That's part of what it is that I do. And I've done that most of my whole life.
What about your, was it your grandfather? Was it?
He was a numerologist and an astrologer.
So
and
can you talk to
and
him
I've
regularly?
Got I don't usually talk to him as much as I talk to my mom, and she's passed too.
Right.
And so I have a lot of people on the other side. And sure, I talk to them. I think that... what I believe is that just because somebody is no longer here in physical form, it doesn't really mean that we can't have a relationship with them. I mean, it's really silly to
you
just
get
say,
arrested for that. By this the way.
Is yeah, not that kind.
Ah, sorry.
And it would be pretty obvious here because everything is above ground, so I couldn't get away with much. You know? But I think that it we just need to kind of develop new relationships. If you've had, I have clients who've, say, been married to somebody for 50 years and that person passes and the rest of the family's like, Kurt, come on, get over it. Move on with things. Marry somebody else. You're young. You know, you're not really young at that point. But also, if you've had a relationship with somebody that you've talked to every day for 50 years, I think it's very artificial to think that that should just stop. And I think that we are putting an immense amount of guilt on people on top of grief because they aren't just letting something go. I have no problem with people talking to people who have passed. If they tell them to do terrible things to other people, and they do, yeah. I have a problem with it. But
I always have a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know how some people say when a loved one passes, they say that they saw them like in a dream, or they saw them like standing somewhere like for a glimpse. Is that a part of it? Like your mind kind of kicks into that third gear or something like that?
And perceives other dimensions. Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, dreams the dream world and when we go into sleep state, we are perhaps at our most receptive. Mm-hmm. A lot of wonderful ideas come through. I mean, it's a really just creative space. It's meditative, you know, probably mm-hmm. the deepest meditation that you can get asleep, right? When we all sit and meditate, we fall asleep, mm-hmm. ultimately, you know? And so I think it opens up that place where we can connect with them. And when they see them, you know, and I get this a lot. People are like, well, do you see them like it was you? You know, like when you see dead people, is it like you're having a conversation like, ooh, I'm having this conversation, and I get up and the thing, it's like, ooh, we were all dead. Ooh, no, and I didn't know. It doesn't work that way, it really. And I think the reason that they don't come back to us in physical form, again, I'll use an instance of a woman who lost her husband. And she said, you know, I can feel him when I go to sleep at night. Why can't I see him? Why doesn't he come back? And why can't I see him like a person? And I'm like, because you'd never leave the room, you know, and you have other things that you need to do. And if you lose somebody once and you get it back, have you ever lost something and you find it? You don't really let that thing go, you know, the next time if you're smart. And so it's the same thing with people. If you've lost somebody and all of a sudden that person comes back, you're not going to leave their side because you know that if you leave, there's a real good chance that they're not going to be there again. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it happens that way. I think that we connect with them in many different signs, and people see things that they have messages, signs, and wonders that connect them to the person. I don't think there's a stock way that the dead communicate, but I think that it's possible for everybody to have those relationships.
It is. All of us could be in touch with dead people, for real.
Yeah.
What about reincarnation? Do we come back as someone else?
This is a tricky thing, because personally, I'm not a big fan of time being exactly the way that we think of it. So I personally think it's all happening at the same time, but that's a whole different conversation.
But isn't that the theory of quantum physics and whatever that...
Yeah, that all things are
simultaneous. There is no time. It's not an arrow. It's a single moment.
Yeah, and so reincarnation is the way that we have to process things so that we can kind of learn from experiences. Again, if we go back to this whole thing being a learning process.
So you believe that we're living simultaneous lives now?
That's what I believe, you know, but...
You're an empress from Egypt and a psychic in New Orleans and...
I've been one of these, excuse my language, you know, there are so many people that just as soon as you start talking about reincarnation, they're the emperor, they're the empress, you know.
Right. What was your language?
Shit kicker of some place. I wasn't really necessarily I'm just not so sure that there aren't that many empresses to start with.
Well, that's
what
everybody was an Egyptian princess.
Everybody. Yeah.
Well, there weren't that many people either, by the way.
Yeah.
There's now 7 billion people on Earth, or 6 billion people, and there used to be like 1 million. So where are all the souls coming from?
Well, I think, again, if we are all, you know, if this is happening at the same time, then we're fragments of an oversoul or a greater soul. And when those things come about in existence, again, I'm not the grand designer, so I'm not sure the reason about that, but that's made more sense to me than any of the other things. I hear a lot of things about what the afterlife is like, and you know, that some of the books that I read are like romance novels to me, because they're just basically describing what we have here, except it's all white and puffy. And I'm thinking, then why would we leave here if it's just like here? It doesn't make any sense. You just stay here, you know? So no body, all bets are off.
Do you get impatient with the sort of trivial stupidity of the world?
No, because I'm really happy to be here. All of the good, bad, all of it, stupid, you know, that's a judgment that I do make from time to time, but I try to stop myself. I think that we're lucky. I think that we chose to come here for good reasons. Again, I think that we're learning something. And so in order to learn, you know, there, it's not always pleasant. Sometimes it's painful. But I think we're lucky to have this. And I do believe that souls keep coming back here. And when I do tap into people who have passed over, they pretty much have the same thing. They're like, don't hurry. It's pretty good here. You know, we want you to stay and do your thing. But, you know, hey, it's like I just got off of a roller coaster and I want to come back again. That's what I keep feeling from souls. You know, it's like, wee, I'm ready to come back. Let's do this over. You know, ooh, that was a fun ride. And so I think if they feel that way, and most lives are a mixture of pleasure and pain, that I really have learned to look at this and be thankful for every single moment. You know, I'm here, I'm breathing, I'm lucky.
Okay. What about a song?
A song?
Do you think it's time to hear another song from Pierre?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like, me? Okay.
Do you want to sing?
My dad was an opera singer, you know.
Your dad was an opera singer?
Yes, I grew up in the opera business.
Sing,
yeah,
though?
I did. Yeah.
Do you still sing?
Every once in a while, yeah, if I have enough of these.
You're a very slow drinker. You've only drank half of your giant margarita.
Well, because I would go into an anxiety attack if I was sitting here with nothing left. Just kidding.
You don't have any anxiety, do you?
Every once in a while, sure.
Do you, even though you can see everything? Can you see your own life? This is a stupid question. I'm sure you get this all the time, too.
No. And this is the question that I get all the time. And I think it's part of objectivity. I think that everybody loses some of it when you're looking at your own life. Yeah. Because we do. We have a central nervous system. I do have anxiety. I have, you know, I go through every other feeling that another human being does. It's just I'm a vessel for information for other people. That's the only thing. And
right.
I think everybody here, as I was sitting, I was like, wow, this is a great, perfect group of people. Because I think we're psychic. Well, I mean, just
you
your great
thank
people.
Thank Graham DePonte for
absolutely.
It.
Thanks, Graham.
Thank you.
Yay. But creativity, you're vessels, right? We're vessels. Mm-hmm. I think it was Stravinsky said that after composing The Rites of Spring, he didn't recall writing it. You know, he didn't recall. He was just, and he said he was a vessel. Mm. And so really everybody here, we're vessels. It's just we're providing different information to people for different reasons. You're making people, you're touching people's lives, you're touching people's lives, you're touching people's lives, you're touching people's lives, the bartender is touching people's lives. We're all touching people's lives. Right. That's what it's all about. Mm. So I think y'all are vessels too. So yay, sing on.
How do you explain people who are doing things that are bad to other people, criminals or people who are hurting other people?
Well, you know, here's a story. I've had this
I wish I could come up with an original question.
I've had preachers as clients, and we've sat down. I mean, I really do have an interesting, you'd be surprised at some of the people that come to me.
Who are they? What are their names? No one listens to the show.
I'm not. No.
Come on.
No.
They wouldn't mind.
No. In that way, I'm like a priest. It's the only way I'm like a priest. I'm not going to tell anybody.
I'm sure you couldn't tell people's names. But what if we guessed a few?
No. Not going to do it. But the interesting thing that we have that I've had debates about is the story of Judas, you know, I mean, and
Judas
Iscariot in the Bible,
Jesus.
Who read it on Jesus, right? In order for the story to kind of turn out the way it did, there had to be Judas. Judas had to do
It'd
that.
Be a bad guy.
There had to be a bad guy, and so
like story, the hero's journey.
Yeah, it is the hero's journey. Yes, Joseph Campbell. Yeah.
It's like me and my good friend. He's the director of the station. We always talk about the hero's journey. That Batman needed the Joker. As every villain, every hero, they need that person to live. Like, that's we get into conversations about the Dark Knights. That did the Joker die? Did he go to the asylum or something? Because it was like, no, Batman didn't kill him because Batman and the Joker, or you know, they need each other. If there's no Joker, then there's no Batman.
So if there's no Jesus, there's no Judas, or vice versa.
There's no Judas, there's no
so
Jesus.
So is any of this true? Was there really a Jesus and a Judas and so on? Did that really happen?
I'm not a historian, you know. So
well, can you get in touch with Jesus?
Wow.
Can't we all?
That's a big order to fill right there.
Well, Michael Jackson, if we could get Michael Jackson and Jesus on the show.
They'd probably both say very much the same thing.
Can we get John Lennon too?
John Lennon would be a great idea.
Yeah. We need them, all of them folks here more. But I think that it. I don't know whether Jesus really existed or not. Again, I'm not a historian.
Do these people, someone who's like Jesus, who died approximately 2014 years ago, I suppose, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Is his spirit still whizzing around somewhere that you could connect with? People who died thousands of years ago?
Well, yeah, and I've connected with inanimate objects. Now this sounds really kind
of
crazy.
Okay. But I know he's already looking.
I had once that when I was connecting with something, I had something come through to me that was an instrument of a very well known musician, and that they said that they were imbued with energy by all of the attention that somebody spent on. Now, again, I'm not sitting here going, this is absolutely, yes, this happens, but a lot of what's going on in theoretical physics is saying that, you know, thought and energy really can influence something. And so who's to say that a guitar doesn't have the same energy, you know, that say a person does if we've imbued them with that much?
And we give them names. And we
name them.
Mm-hmm.
I think definitely you can walk into someone's house and people say, what a great house, and it isn't really a great house at all. It's just there's something about the energy in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the same kind of thing, that your
Absolutely.
Energy from you imbues the house from a guitar or whatever. And when people move out, it changes the whole place.
Looks totally
changed. Feels different. So it seems not unreasonable that something could absorb some sort of energy.
Well, and people will often bring something. I don't need it, but they'll bring something that belonged to somebody who departed. Or when I do a missing persons case, they'll bring things to me and they'll say, here, this is what, you know,
missing
this is
persons.
Could
it, yeah. Hey, let's get on to missing persons. Could you hold my pen and tell me something about myself? Don't do it. let's have one more song because we have to get out of here at some point pretty soon. Yeah. Oh, my God. In fact, almost any minute.
We can end it on You Do My Slapper.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
This
What's
is
this one?
A love song. Julia, you want to talk about it?
It's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet song. It's about a man and a woman who can't be together because the man is too poor, and so he's saying to the woman's lotto, I'll go abroad and I'll make money and then I'll come back and marry you. So the beginning is kind of like a duet. I'm going to take off my headphones.
You can you can take them off, of course.
Whoa.
How does it feel? Yeah.
He do my slato do, he mori do my na my kasi, he teb na menda,
he teb na menda,
he mori teb na menda,
he mori teb na menda da.
How did you like that without the headphones?
Brava, brava.
Nice job. So does it end happily? Does he make all the money and come back and marry the girl, or do we not know that?
I don't know.
Yes, he does.
Of course he
does.
He did. Okay, we've got to get out of here, but before we go, Carrie, I just wanted to follow up on something you said before the song, which was missing persons. You can find missing persons?
I do my best. Yeah, I don't have 100% accuracy in it, but...
Well, the day we're talking about this, by the time you hear this podcast, sometimes people listen to these shows years later. Mm-hmm. Today we're recording this flight from that's going from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing disappeared somewhere over the oceans off Vietnam. Nobody has a clue what happened to it as we're sitting here today. Do you have any idea what could happen to all those souls?
What could happen to the souls?
Or what happened to the plane? Could you get in touch with these dead people? Suppose they did.
It's gone. I mean, it's down. It's not a million little teeny pieces.
On an island in the middle of the ocean. They're all like lost.
I don't get that. No, unfortunately, when by the time you know they come to me, it's usually not a good story. You know,
Right.
I'm not the first person that they call. You know, I'm usually
so
the
cops
last.
Come to you and say, yeah, they're
it's
stuck.
Not the cops so much. It's the families that come.
Oh, right.
You know, especially you know nobody really wants to say, oh well, we can't do our job. We need to get the psychic. You know, because we didn't do our job. But I mean, it's usually families. I've done work with some police officers who have come to me directly, but it is primarily the families that come.
What's the most? Well, we have to get out of here, but we could stay here all day and ask these. What's the most interesting part of your job?
Being able to connect with so many wonderful people, and I mean, I travel without ever having to leave the room. Having people trust me enough to bring their vulnerable. People don't come to me usually in the greatest of spaces. They're coming
people
to
come
me.
People come to you when they're in trouble and they want to,
in
they
some
want to
way
sort
or
something
another.
Out
yeah,
in their lives.
Yeah.
They're at a crossroads.
Yeah, and to be the person that they have trusted enough to give that vulnerable space to, that just, I can't ever feel bad, you know, from being able to help a person in that
place. So for $100 we can get our life sorted out, basically.
Sure. Snap, crackle, pop.
That's it. Yep. So you're going to have to go to years of therapy or
I'm not gonna
join the army or something.
I'm not going to put anybody else out of business. I just do what I do. And when you come to see me, I can pretty much solve things in a short period of time.
Wow. Okay. There guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah.
That's been Happy Hour
thank
for
you.
Today.
Thank you.
What a great hour it's been. Thank you very much. Carrie Roy, best psychic in America, as determined by BBC.
BBC America.
No less. BBC America, no less. Yep. Kevin McLean.
Yes.
We're looking forward to seeing stuff coming out. We can go check out Fundat and give you a couple of bucks and help out.
Definitely.
And PAYA, PYEYA, if you are looking for it. You can look for that on our website too. It's newholmes.com. Members of PAYA are Annalisa Kelly, Ruby Ross, and Julia Michaels. Thank you so much for joining us
and for singing for us
today. What a great show. Our producer is Graham DePonte. Our associate producer and technical director is Chris Kehoe. Christian Unruh is the music director of the show, and Joshua Brown is our music coordinator. The theme song that you're listening to was written and is being played by Mitch Foreman, and the fabulous audio quality of this show is brought to you in part by PreSonus Audio Electronics and also Chris Kehoe. PreSonus makes some of the best audio recording and live sound products around, including Studio One music production software, Studio Live digital mixing consoles, Aeris studio monitors, and much more. You can find out more about that at presonus.com. If you'd like to be on our show and you can sit around this table for about an hour here at Casa Borrega, drop us a line. Our address is on our website. We can also check out many other happy hours and our other shows. Out to Lunch with Peter Ricciuti, live from Commander's Palace. Mindset with psychiatrist Dr. Nick Pajic. True to the Game with the fabulous Chris True and Tammy Nelson. Vietnola, our show about the New Orleans Vietnamese community. And Midnight Menu Plus One with Margot Moss and the man who ate New Orleans, Ray Canata. You can keep up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and a whole bunch of other time-sucking social media as well. On all of it, where It's New Orleans. You can find photos from this show on itsneworleans.com and Facebook. Those photos were taken by the fabulous Douglas Engel with his woolly hat. If you're listening to this on iTunes, Stitcher, or Swell, our favorite podcast app, or some other podcast app of your own choosing, thank you for subscribing to us. Take a moment to rate and review us, then helps other people find us. That would be great if you would do that. Our show is recorded live today at Casa Borrega on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard in Central City in New Orleans. Casa Borrega is a bar, a restaurant, and a live music venue. Check them out. Come down here and check it out for yourself. Happy Hour is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsneworleans.com. For Andrew Duhon, who will be back here at some point from traveling around the world. Everyone out back at the office at INO, Graham DePonte sitting behind me, and Chris Kehoe on the other side. I'm Grant Morris. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you back here next time on Happy Hour.